Video game bang, video game bang, video game bang. Mega Ran. Live from the sack, it's the live, it's in fact. I'm putting rhymes on this track to put my guys on the map. Updates, geek news, tech talk, and reviews. They can summarize it so you ain't gotta breeze through. Listen once and you're forever fans. And I'm not saying it because their theme song features Mega Ran, the ultimate source of all geek media. Other podcasts, they just don't match up. Need proof? You can check the archives and catch up. Stats off the chain, we have rearranged the game. It'll never be the same. Now it's time to feel the
bang. What is up, my pizzas? Corey Vincent here, and this is a new episode of Video Game Bang, episode 500 and something, man. I already lost count. This is too much. Too much math adding all these episodes together. He's been around for a large heft of them. David Webb, what's up?
What is up, everybody? Good to be back.
You seem pretty tired, man.
I'm exhausted. I'm drinking a Bang energy drink.
And it's like 8:30 at night, dude. That's not a good thing to do. Now you're not going to be able to sleep at night, and it's just going to be problems. We got to have an intervention, dude.
They don't keep me awake. They keep me sustained. So it's not going to wake me up. It's just going to keep me at this level. I'm not going to get worse.
That's terrible.
That's where caffeine, that's the effect caffeine has on me at this point.
You are just a myth to modern science right now. Nothing about you is organic. Reasons. You're just running off of artificial energy.
Most people are 70% water. I'm 70% like some sort of caffeine.
Drink water. Walk outside a little bit.
I drink a lot. I got a Yeti. So I got a
you would have a Yeti, you know what? This man, I'm sure, he probably has a Yeti too. Everybody has him. Curtis Fisher, what's going on, man?
If the game's right, Kurt there, A-night.
Hey!
What up?
He's back in the house.
I don't got a Yeti. I got a, I think it's called like a Rove or a Rave or something like that.
I have a Hydro Flask.
Hydro
Flask? Or Thermo Flask.
Thermo Flask?
Yeah,
okay.
Thermo Flask.
I think mine is like that, but it's got like a pop top. I used to bring it here.
I got the Costco special.
Ah, okay.
Hey, that's all right. Hey, it'll do you just fine, and if it breaks down, you can return it in 5 years.
So. Exactly.
It works.
Kurt, you've been away working on some side projects, some really cool stuff with Sacktown Breakdown. You interviewed your first big guest on your show, mm-hmm. Worthington Colt, player from the Kingsguard. Is he still going to be a Kingsguard member? Did he give you the scoop?
He did not give me the scoop. It was actually Yusuf. We interviewed Yusuf.
Oh, Yusuf.
Yeah.
Oh,
you're okay. Thinking Worthington Colt because I got Colt's jersey.
Yeah, you're wearing
jersey
his jersey
right
and you took him to the airport. Right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
We interviewed Yusuf and none of the stuff like that. You know, some things are like off the table that they can't talk about and stuff like that.
Oh, I know.
But we talked about a bunch of other stuff, just like what it takes to be in the league, you know, to be a professional gamer / professional 2K player and, you know, the sacrifices that you have to make and then also how we're real people and we have aspirations outside of that. So we covered quite a bit and of course we kept it light. We also played some NBA 2K after. We played 2v2s, me and my co-host Tap of the Sacktown Breakdown, and then we played we did like a video concept like how good is a professional gamer / 2K player. So Tap played him one-on-one and I played him one-on-one. And Tap didn't score.
Was that your goal? Just put one on the board?
Nah, my goal is to win. Like every time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
How'd that work out?
I didn't win, but I did better than Tap. I got a dunk on him, too. I got a nasty dunk on him.
Hey.
Yeah, man. I got that Mamba mentality. I know I'm a Kings fan, but I'm Mamba mentality. I don't give a damn who you are. You bleed like I bleed. Let's go.
Before we get to our guest, I'll share, because I was at Caltopia this last weekend in Cal Berkeley with a few of our Shock players, Choi Hilbin and mm-hmm. Architect. And Choi Hilbin and Architect were doing like open invitational where they would sit down and you could walk up and play against them 1v1.
Oh, nice.
They'd let you choose the character. Even.
Oh, no way.
They won every single one except one.
Okay.
Architect, I think, got beat by some guy who wanted to do Torbjörn Hammers only.
And okay.
So that guy got him. But I played against Choi Hilbin on Roadhog.
Mm-hmm.
And Roadhog is his character. That's the one he's known for. So mm-hmm. I kind of had that same little chip on my shoulder because I play a lot of Roadhogs.
Let's see how
I stack up to the best.
Yeah.
And we played on Ilios Well, which is the map with a giant hole in the middle.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And
okay.
The whole point is to use Roadhog to hook and get cheesy, you know, kills that way.
Right.
And it was a best of three. And I got one. I got one on the board.
Hey, let's
go.
Nice.
I was very proud of it. The team manager, who knows how trash I am, will never let him live it down. Everyone had their cameras out because they know how bad I am at the game. So me killing him was the most embarrassing thing that could have happened.
So when's your Overwatch Contenders debut?
I'm auditioning for a few Contenders teams this weekend. So joining us, I'm so excited about this interview. As you guys know, we're going to be a part of the SAC Indie Festival going on down here in Sacramento, and we're excited about it. Last time we talked to the developer for what was the game called? Pawn and Patoo, that super amazing kids game platformer that I dominated, and hopefully we have another game I'm going to dominate. We have Adam here from Signspace, and Signspace is like an MMO with all user generated content. Tell us a little bit more about it, Adam.
Yeah, so basically what we're building is a big shared space that I think a few people have seen Ready Player One.
It's kind of similar
to what we're building. So we're building a big shared world that anyone can come along and be a part of and build some fraction of the world as a whole. The goal is really to have tens of thousands of people building worlds for millions of other people to check out. And basically the old ultimate goal is to really build this huge environment that can sustain whatever you want to build creatively and bring that to the world. So what we do is we're actually more of a tools company than actually the game itself. Like, we'll build all the front end and all the software and the bits that make it work. But all the fun stuff that gets built inside there is entirely built by the actual user community itself.
Well, that's interesting. So how did what was the inspiration behind this project? Because there's been other similar things out there, right? Because there's like Star Citizen is doing like user generated economy stuff in space, and then people hear of like Second Life. How is this different from all those?
Well, in many respects, it inherits a lot of the ideas from a lot of those platforms. I actually have been around this space for too long now, about 20 years or so. The first one that popped up that's kind of similar to what we're doing is a one from 95 called Active Worlds, and the you go look at it today, it looks absolutely crap, but that's sort of the nature of something that was built 30-something years ago. It is, in fact, 30 years old now. And what we've been doing is we've been taking a look at all these things. Like Second Life, it got some cool ideas, but the problem was that if you are a creative professional, you're someone who knows what you're doing, like you work as a game developer for a big studio or whatever and you're part-time, the problem is that the tools don't actually work with what you want to build. So let's say you want to build a high-end first-person shooter that's got sort of twitch reflexes and all the rest of it that the game is built around. Those platforms won't support you because they've got architectural decisions in how they've been made that limits what creators can do. So we've actually been looking at all the micro details, all the things that say this is not going to work because that, and trying to fix it to make it possible so that you can sort of instantly load another environment that's got a completely different gameplay system built into it.
Wow.
I can actually show some user-generated content too if you want. I actually don't have it loaded, but we can actually sort of demonstrate some of the stuff that we're talking about. Would it be cool if I share my screen?
Yeah, go ahead. That'd be awesome.
I wasn't actually planning off the cuff to do this, but
that's incredible. So that's cool. So what makes it different? Because in a lot of these other ones, they're just making like logos on T-shirts and things like this.
Yep.
So you're saying this is like Ready Player One, where you could build like a racing game inside of your game.
Yeah, I'm just in a welcome environment now. There's a bunch of people standing around here, but I'm gonna go teleport off to something that was built entirely by users. So where are we in loop? You're a decent one. There's no one in this particular environment at the moment, but there is some NPCs that we can shoot up. So the really cool thing about this particular environment we're loading now is that this is 100% user-generated. The scripts that actually power the whole game engine, completely written by the end users themselves, which means that we don't build any first-person shooter components into the platform itself. It was built entirely.
So how does that work? How do you keep that like control over the what you have in the game then? Or do you?
We don't. We've got some control over what we do. We have a moderation team who does vet and modify what users build.
Has that been a problem yet? Like, have you guys found weird stuff?
I would say that broadly speaking, 99% of the people who build stuff is sort of responsible and they build cool stuff and they don't really try and grief other players. We've got about 1% who do sort of insist on bending and breaking whatever rules we put in place. Most of those rules are just simply things like don't flash porn up on people's screens. That kind of thing. We do have some users who very creatively try and circumvent that review process that has been mostly a good thing, but we also have had to sort of validate that we need a moderation team building stuff. As I said, there's not a lot in here at the moment without another player, but the cool thing is all the guns, all the pickups, all the animations, all the monsters that are sort of hanging around in the scene are built entirely by users, and then we can sort of go off somewhere else, teleport over to something else that someone's built. So what have I got in here? Well, I'm getting killed in the background.
Interesting. So what about like the user skill level? Because when I see this stuff, like, it's just completely intimidating. It's like, oh.
It depends. We've actually got both. We've got the sort of the easy. In fact, what I'll do is I'll just load up another environment as well. We've just added the ability to sort of use all the user interface and stuff while stuff is downloading. So let me hop into a region that I've got. Just trying to pick one that I know is going to work. There's a lot of test scenes in my space here, but I'll just create a new region. Apparently, I need to enable one. Yeah, whatever, I'll use this one. I don't know what's in here. We might find all sorts of bits and pieces hanging around. So we've got different ways of building competent. You've got the complex way, in which case we load up something like tool like Unity. I was actually working on a bit of a volleyball game as a demo last week for someone, so I've got the pieces of that one assembled in here. And in this case, this is technical tools. This is stuff built for professional designers. So you work in whatever 3D editing packages and things you're comfortable with, you can get going and actually work at the skill level you're used to. For more average users, well, this is taking a while. We can sort of go in here and use the in-client editing tools. And the in-client editing tools are a bit more friendly for an average developer. So those game components, I don't know if I've actually got any in my inventory. No, I don't, unfortunately. I can grab some, but for instance, let's say I just want to decorate this one simply. I can just grab this stuff. It'll all progressively stream down on demand, which is also a big thing that we've done. So it's not downloading the whole 50 gig or whatever of game content when you start. We actually start with just a couple of hundred meg. I think it's about 300 meg, and then we stream everything down on demand. But all these tools are designed to be a little bit friendlier to use, so you can sort of pick up and move things around the scene. We've got the ability for them to sort of snap onto various surfaces you place. I mean, all this stuff is a bit more approachable, and then you can sort of edit the finer details here. So this is all sort of the simpler end of the spectrum, but the thing is that it means that people who aren't professional game developers can actually get in and build more complicated content with a bit more ease than they have picking up the full end tools. But the cool thing is that the tools we've designed here all use the same shortcuts, all the same gizmos and things, these sort of controls, as the professional tools. So actually, as you learn the basic tools that we've got, you begin to pick up some of the more skills that will let you cross the boundary and actually go into the more professional tools when you're ready to actually make that leap.
This is crazy fascinating. How did you get involved with this project? Were you from the beginning?
Yes. So I've been involved in this for a long time now. We actually set out to build this project in 2009. It took quite a long time to actually get off the ground. We ended up building similar stuff for corporate clients. We had some large corporate backers who wanted to build their own little virtual worlds for products and all the rest of it. We did that for a number of years, but about 2014 we decided that we would shift this over to a fully user-generated platform, because we built all these cool tools for ourselves. We were making these environments for various enterprises and TV stations and things like that, and we're thinking, you know what, these are actually pretty good tools. We could probably open them up to the public. And we thought about that, and it took about 2 years to sort of re-engineer the stuff we'd built to make it a little bit more user-friendly for developers. And then we launched into beta at the very end of 2016, at the start of 2017, and we've been in beta for about 2 years now. And what we're doing is we're actually working on getting all the tools and things to actually enable greater and richer levels of content that people can build. So you can build everything from games and things like that to vehicles and clothing and wow, all sorts of bits and pieces. Anything you can think of. If you want to have a gesture where you sort of flip some other avatar over or whatever, you can build those things. We support all the professional tools here as well. So that's one of our big big things is that if you know how to do something in a particular way, we want to be able to enable that and support you to be able to build that stuff, because ultimately the cool thing is that the higher the greater the level of customization and things that you as a developer can do, the more cool things you can make in the actual platform. You can mix and match them together. One of the really cool things about, for instance, that first-person shooter system I showed you is that the actual system is open source. The developer who built it threw it up onto GitHub. So if you were a designer who wants to make compatible weapons and things like that, you actually can. You can grab the same scripts and drop your own 3D models into these, maybe change the animations out, all those kinds of things, and then you can actually just upload that content yourself. And,
how big is the player base currently?
So the player base is still growing.
Or are they even players at this point? Or
they kind of are. Yeah, it's a bit of a mix. We've probably got more developers to end users at the moment than we would once we actually do a formal launch, once we go out of beta and do a big public launch. We've got about 20,000 or so, maybe a bit more. I'm not 100% sure what the latest number was. 20,000 was accurate about 6 months ago, but I think it's grown a bit since then. That's monthly active users. Most of them don't stick around because it's still early and there's not enough content being into the platform, but we've seen some really big growth in the amount of content. The last month we've had sort of one developer who single-handedly uploaded through like 10,000 items now, which is just crazy amounts of content.
At what point do you just bring those guys in as like part of the team?
Well, the goal is we don't. That's the whole idea. The whole idea is that if you have a library of cool 3D assets and whatever, you can bring them in yourself and immediately they become accessible. And actually, it's kind of cool for people who are game devs who have got old projects. Like, say you've built all these cool assets that went into a project you released 5 years ago. The cool thing is you can just take all those assets and upload them and then give a whole new lease of life to them, because players can sort of take those things and you can buy and sell them on our shop that's built in. In fact, that's how the whole platform is run. It's obviously free to play, and the idea is that we've got an in-game currency that developers who build content can cash out for, which means that as a developer you can start cashing out a couple hundred bucks a month at the moment, but that will grow quite dramatically as we go into a final launch.
Are there people in the environment right now making money off of generating content?
Yeah, we've got quite a few people who are making money at this point. I think on the average month there's about a couple hundred who will earn something in the month. It's growing, and the cool thing is that as the platform goes to launch, then eventually it becomes a bigger deal. So the good thing is for those developers who are getting in now is that they're building out the launch inventory effectively of stuff to do and things to buy and all the rest of it, which means as we begin to throw the users in, they've got the competitive advantage because the shop is all their content to begin with.
So you guys are going to be having a presence here in Sacramento's convention.
Indeed.
And how do you guys, because like you're from England.
I'm from Australia.
Oh, you're from Australia. Who's from England?
I'm from Australia. We've got a team in England. We have a team in Mumbai. We have a office in Shanghai. We have all sorts of people all over the place. But we actually also have a team in Sacramento. Our community team is based there, and we've got a couple of people hanging around. So they're the people who are going to be there. They actually cover the whole gamut of things that you can do. So they know how to upload content, how to actually play and access some of this cool stuff that people are building. So when they heard about that, they reached out and set that up, which is cool. And we're always a fun bunch to meet. They've got a drinks budget, I think.
Oh, really? So that's we know which booth we're hanging out around.
Yeah.
Next week.
Actually, I don't know they're allowed to bring that in, but there will be stuff, I'm sure. We usually try and make that happen.
That's awesome. So you guys are technically, I guess, still considered an indie developer.
Yes.
So how did you get started have you worked on any other games we may have heard about?
Probably not too many you've heard about. I've been floating around the industry for a while now. I actually sort of started off in one of those game dev degrees back in 2003.
Oh, the good old years.
Yes. Yeah, quite a while ago. And I've been sort of hovering around the industry, but mostly where I've been focusing and where I've been working has been on these kinds of user-generated content spaces. So I've actually worked for a large number of the companies who have been in this space. I did contracting for the company who made Second Life. I did one for Active Worlds in the end as well.
Oh, wow.
As well as sort of half a dozen of others. So my sort of background and space is really on trying to build user-generated tools. That's what I like to work for and like to work on.
What about coming up? Like, what games inspired you to go that direction? Were you playing like The Sims back in the old days? Or
No, I never really got into that. And the reason why is because I don't like, and this is a personal choice, I don't like putting sort of narrative and restrictions on what you can build. I like to try and build tools that enable people to build whatever they liked. And that's why I did gravitate to a few of these early virtual worlds, like Active Worlds, for example. Because you go in there and the very first time you encounter something where you can actually just build creatively for yourself, it's more of a, I guess it's online Lego than it is anything else. It's online Lego with scripting. And wow. Sort of the power of just those little basic combinations and building blocks is truly amazing once you actually begin to appreciate what you can actually build with these platforms.
What's the closest you've ever been to this type of game, David or Curtis? Have you ever experimented with these user-generated? Sims is it for me. I have never
tried. Yeah, I played Sims a little bit. I played a little bit of Second Life because I saw it in The Office. And so I want to be. Was like, well, let me see what this is. And then I wandered into the wrong area and quickly was like, all right, I'm done. This is too much.
What did you see?
Oh.
Things.
I can't imagine.
I saw a lot. I saw a lot of things that you can't unsee.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think that's kind of might be one of the stigmas about these types of games in general is just that when you give anybody a forum to be express themselves, you're gonna get people who you're like, okay, put that back in the box.
Yeah,
don't express that.
Put that back in the box, close the box, and put the box way deep. Yeah, don't open it again.
But I don't think those types of people have many places to express those things. That's so maybe true. That's why they gravitate towards this
and then
stuff.
It's like, who are we to judge? Yeah. It's just like, all right, you have your own little corner, go do that over there.
What about you, Kurt? I mean, you're a creator of all different mediums, you know, music to good times. What about you? Have you piqued your interest in these like digital spaces where you create stuff?
I don't know if I'm smart enough to be doing all that stuff. I'm a steak and potatoes. I keep it pretty simple. Probably the closest thing I've gotten to something like this is still pretty far off, but it would be like Terraria.
Okay.
It was like
I was going there too. I was thinking Minecraft maybe. Yeah, you know, right, just like no, it drop you in. You can build whatever you want.
Right. Yep, yeah, that's the closest thing.
SimCity. You guys play SimCity as a kid?
Uh-uh. Oh, no, but I played the one with the roller coasters.
Oh, Roller Coaster Tycoon?
Yeah.
SimCity was cool because you could build a city and then you'd be like, hurricane. And then you're like, boom! Destroy it with a hurricane and start over.
Is there griefing in this game? Can you like go to someone's house and wreck all their cool stuff?
That's the thing, no. Perfect. Do actually to put a permissions model on it, so they can only wreck your stuff if you give them permission to do so. We just enabled multi-user editing of the same content, which is one of the big updates that's coming out our next release. And that will probably enable a little bit more of it. I'm sure we're going to get an uptick in I gave permission to someone to edit my stuff and they edited my stuff. I'm sure the support team's going to love that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, these spaces, you've got that creative. I mean, there's a good and a bad thing, particularly the ones in Second Life. I remember there was quite a lot of interesting content, I think, if we're going to use as a euphemism. We're trying to make it possible both to sort of have your own spaces and they're sort of privately managed, but we're also making sure that anything is in public. And that means that things that you can access if you are a new user. We're trying to make sure that's always a somewhat moderated experience so that not scaring off a lot of people, because that was a big problem. When I was doing work for Second Life and I was doing a whole bunch of stuff in it as well, one of the big problems they had was that new user retention was terrible, absolutely terrible. In fact, I think even today it still is, and there's two reasons for that. The first is, one, people accessing negative experiences and immediately getting harassed by other
David.
Users and all that stuff.
And
it's a thing. It happens. And the other one was that there was nothing to do. There's no narrative for new players. And we were also trying to work on that. That's one of the reasons like the game I was streaming a second ago is quite cool, is because it gives something people to do when they first hop in. It's the ability to say, hey, go check out this and then go check out that and all these cool things that people are building. So we actually have people who are doing, for instance, you're talking about Roller Coaster Tycoon. I actually saw something the other day. It's a developer's project that hasn't been released yet, so I don't know if I can sort of give too many details because I don't like wrecking people's privacy on what they're working on. But they were working on a kind of loop-the-loop racing system, so you could actually sort of build out these racing tracks, and it was all within the environment. So it was quite cool to see this because you've got these physics simulations in it that when you do go fast around the loops and things, it's all behaving itself, and the camera wasn't flipping upside down and all sorts of bits and pieces. And that's what I like to see. I like to look, as a developer, I get called in to actually look at what other people are building all the time. I'd say probably maybe 4 hours a day is pretty much going in to answer people's questions on how this, why this isn't working or whatever, and I do a lot of sort of one-on-one assistance with people building this this content. But it is quite cool. And again, looping back to my original point, was that what we want to be able to do is we want to be able to build these first experiences so that you've got a couple of hours. We think it's probably about 30 hours or so. We want to have like 30 hours of curated experiences available to new users. And by the time you've hit that 30-hour point, then you might be interested in building your own content. You might be building friendships with other people who have made cool stuff. And we want to sort of build it up that level because that's what we want to have that experience, that you go in, you've got stuff to do, you've got cool stuff to see, and then by the time you've seen it all, you want to start making your own.
I want to say the closest, now that you kind of explained it in a different way, Kurt, I think in a lot of ways 2K19 is like that. Like in the park open space, like, yep. I can't tell you how many times me and you will be playing. You'll be like, hold on, I'm going to go change my shoes. I got to go back to my house. And he runs away to his house and he comes back and then it's like, hey, let's go to this court. We all got to run together to that court. Yeah. You know, it's like a cool, you could totally see how you could, you know, make new friendships, just kind of navigating this completely open-ended environment. Except in another way, like, hey, you want to go shoot some cans off this fence or whatever? You
know,
like,
sure, on Mars. So you mentioned that you guys are still in kind of like a beta phase, so this might be looking too far into the future, but what are like some of the future plans you have? Like, you talked about how this is similar to like Ready Player One. Is there any ideas for making this VR compatible in the future?
Sweet. Do. In fact, we shipped a VR update of it last year, which was a little bit not so good. But the viewer we just pushed out about 2 months ago has a revamped VR support. We have full support for all the VR headsets out there that connect to a PC. We are probably going to launch on the Quest. I don't quite know the full details of that one because they're still working on content optimization and things that'll make it work, because unfortunately the mobile VR headsets, they're a little bit underpowered, but we think we can get that one to behave itself properly because we've been working on actually getting onto phones as well. So we actually have iPads and phone clients available internally for testing.
What's the thought process between going to phones? Like, on something so big and robust, why would you try and limit it or bring it down to the phone?
Because fundamentally these environments are not just sort of gaming experiences, they're also social experiences. And when you start looking at what people are actually using their computers for, it's less and less these days. People are moving more to consoles, they're moving more to phones and handheld devices. And when we build an environment like this, we have a really long time frame. Like a game that goes, a non-MMO game has a shelf life of about 6 months, give or take, until it's replaced with the next big new thing. Maybe it's a breakout hit like Fortnite, for instance, and it lasts 2 years before it's up.
Fortnite Online was a good game. One. Like, that's kind of what I was thinking about, because you mentioned Fortnite. Yep. It went to mobile, and largely a lot of people, I mean, maybe it gets a lot of play, but everyone says, oh, the mobile version sucks, and the players aren't legit. Like,
yeah. Look, that's fine. When you look at what we're doing, though, we've got about a 25-year horizon on how long the game will actually run for, at least. Wow. When we look at all these old worlds, like, for instance, Second Life, Active Worlds, IMVU, there, a bunch of other ones, they consistently run for decades, which means that we need to think about, okay, well, where's the world going to go in 25 years? And the answer is probably mobile VR and AR and phones and all the rest of it are going to be the dominant devices for a lot of people. So we're thinking about this stuff early. It's important to make sure that works. But it also, again, I look back and say it's a social experience. Social experiences you've got your phone on you. So someone says, come check out this cool thing that I built, and you're at work. You're not going to log in on your work machine because that's probably restricted, but you've got your phone handy. You can hop in and check it out. And we actually have got the content working pretty robustly on phone devices now. We've still got a few things to worry about in terms of memory restrictions that we're working around. I think we've made some big progress on, but I would say about 90% of the content right now loads pretty reliably on mobile, and maybe 10% is just a little bit too high end for it. But that's also a big challenge because developers who build the stuff in these environments have got no idea how to optimize their content. We actually do all of that automatically for them. Wow. So when you build something and it's incredibly high detail, suddenly it'll melt the phone processor. And even on the average user, about 30 to 40% of our users access have Intel integrated graphics, which, if anyone is knows, are absolutely terrible. They are the bane of my existence and cause of much hair loss.
Tell us how you really feel, man.
Yeah, they're fun. But the upside is that all the work we're doing for optimizing for those low-end devices also helps for people who buy a $300 laptop and want a smooth 30-frame-plus experience. We can use all the same tricks and tips things we do on all the low-end machines apply just as well there.
All right, man. So if people want to get their hands on this game and check it out themselves, it is available for download just for anybody already. Right now, you don't have to wait. Where do they got to go to get
it? All the developer tools, too. We're always looking for people who are creative to come in and check that stuff and play with the tools, because the tools, I think, at the most part, the most polished part at the moment, because we've been really focusing heavily on making developers' lives as easy as we can. But yes, it's sign.space, S-I-N-E, as in the mathematical function, sign.space, and you can just download from there.
And if you're in the Sacramento area, you can come hang out, get hands on the game, meet us. We're going to be streaming there that day from the VGB booth and the Stream Center, and it's going to be really fun, so you don't want to miss out on that. We'll have some awesome stickers to give away. Look, there's a David Webb sticker based off of one of our emotes. Whoop, whoop. And we'll be looking forward to it. But now let's get into a little bit of the news, David. What's going on in the world, man?
We got more Karate Guy news.
Ninja. Well, we can say it now.
We can say it. Emma's
not here. Yeah.
Ninja news.
Ninja news.
Ninja
My
news.
My favorite thing. I look forward to what's happening with Ninja every week. Because it's always something
it's
different.
It's always something happening every week. And I think that should be a new segment. Ninja news. Emma's going to be pissed when she hears this on the recording. So Ninja signed a deal with Adidas.
Every week it's just something more and more cool. He's living... Everybody who loved Halo back in the day, like every Xbox fanboy kid, he's living your dream right now.
He's living everybody's best
he's
life.
He's Mr. Xbox. He's going to be the face of Halo. They're going to pull off Master Chief's helmet, and
it's
going to
be him. It's going to be Ninja.
Under there. Yep. Hey, guys.
Hey, guys.
Like and subscribe. Whatever they
Let's
say.
Let's go play Fortnite.
Yeah. So he's the new face of this bad boy. And then now he's got 1.5 million subs. And now Adidas has a deal with him. And so everybody on social media who's cool got sent a Ninja box and was opening it. And I didn't see a shoe collab.
So right now, we don't know what the collab entails.
Yeah.
So.
Well, like sweaters at the very least, because I was seeing like sweaters and some joggers.
So, I saw that too. But after reading this article, I don't know if those were real or if those were mock-ups.
Okay.
So, you know what I mean?
Or maybe it was just like a promotional
maybe
kickoff bundle.
Maybe it's just a
bundle.
Promotional thing. Yeah. Because so the article I'm looking at is from The Verge. And it's talking about there aren't any shoes or apparel for sale right now. But on his Mixer stream, Ninja said, I can't say specifically what is in the works with Adidas, but use your imagination.
It's going to be one fucking blue shoe and then one fucking pink shoe. Just
or
like
yellow.
His hair.
Yeah. Blue and then yellow. It's going to be an ugly pair of Ultra Boosts that everybody is going to want.
No, everybody under the age of 12 is going to want. Yeah. I swear to God.
Yeah.
I saw people, they put Jordan 1s in a Fortnite patch once.
Oh, yeah.
Where people could like jump higher or something like that.
Yeah.
And I read a tweet that just embodied everything that the Fortnite community ruins. And it was some dude who was like a sneakerhead who was like, yeah, I wore my Jordan 1s out today and heard a kid whisper to his mom, those are the Fortnite shoes.
Oh, my God.
And he says, I'm never wearing my Jordan 1s again. Oh, man.
Adam, that's true, though.
Are you into shoes or anything? You a sneakerhead?
No, I'm not.
What are you rocking right now?
I have a pair of Vans.
Hey, there you go. Vans are always cool. Classic. Timeless.
California.
Yeah.
So Adidas is not the first shoe company or sports apparel company to get into esports. Nike signed a deal earlier this year to make jerseys for the League of Legends pro team in China.
That's pretty cool.
So they're kind of following suit, but I read today that Ninja is the first esports individual to be sponsored.
Get his own collaboration,
his own line.
He's got a Nerf gun. Now he's got Adidas shoes.
It's insane. So, okay, so the end of this article breaks down everything that he has going on.
Oh, God.
So, he's partnered with Samsung. He's been partnered with Samsung for a while. So, yeah. He was in Galaxy S10 ads, S9. He also makes money from a number of deals, including long-time-running Red Bull sponsorship, YouTube ads.
Yeah.
He gets paid to play certain games, included a reported, we talked about this a little bit ago, how much he got paid.
For Apex.
Yeah. $1 million for playing Apex.
Jesus.
And then he also just released a book.
All right, Adam, that's the strategy. Just pay Ninja $1 million.
Yeah,
pay Ninja $1 million, and then your game is going to be huge.
$1 million in in-game currency.
Million gold.
I could do that in in-game currency. That's no problem.
Of course you can. Man.
It's like $100 in real dollars.
Yeah, you can do whatever you want in that world. Yeah, that's crazy, dude. Curtis, are you going to go get them new ninjas?
Yeah, man. I'm about to go get them.
Insta-cop?
I get a discount on Adidas shoes, so I'm about to cop and just resell them.
You know what I want for my birthday, Curtis?
I'll buy you one ninja shoe. I'll get you the blue one.
I just need the blue one. That's the only one.
There you go. I'll get you the blue one. And then for the other one, you got to wear one of those boots where you roll your ankle or you break it. So no one asks you where you have the ninja shoe. Man, I hurt my ankle. I can only wear one ninja shoe.
God, that reminds me of those Skechers. Do you remember those Skechers that would like be like boats?
I don't remember it would tighten your butt. Nah, I don't remember no Skechers. Skechers are not worth remembering, so I do not remember Skechers. Okay.
There were these Skechers.
The workout ones, and you would kind of like rock when you walked.
They were like shaped like
Shape Ups.
Yeah, Shape Ups is what they were called.
You guys are putting me to shame that you even remember the name of this terrible invention.
It was in the
terrible, terrible trend. This terrible, terrible time. You talk about Heelys before you talk to me about
Heelys.
Some
are
shape
cool
up.
Though. Heelys are still cool.
So right. Fun fact about Heelys: I sold a Heely knockoff for a minute at the mall.
Were they called Wheelies?
They were.
I'm glad you said at the mall. It made it sound like you're selling them out of your trunk or something. Like,
no,
I manufactured a Heely ripoff called Webbies.
I managed a kiosk at the mall for like Christmas season, and they were like Heelys, but they weren't built into your shoe. You just strapped them onto your feet.
Oh no!
And I kid you not, I had to demo them, so I had to wear them while I'm working it. I kid you not, I fell on my ass hard, twisted my ankle.
Jeez.
The next day I show up on crutches, and my boss is like,
"You're fired.
Why don't you just take the day off? No. We can't have you on crutches
trying to sell
kiosk.
These shoes. Your kids will love these."
No, I got into a fight. This isn't from these. This is fine.
They wouldn't have believed that.
That's where your boss fell short, because what they should have done is set up another kiosk right next to you where you sell crutches and they sell
anything. There you go.
They could have had the whole organization.
Get coming and going.
That's what I'm saying.
David, you could bring the dream back and make these Heelys and start selling them in science space.
I saw a kid at Target yesterday with Heelys. I didn't even know that was still a thing. I didn't know they still existed.
Does that exist in science space? Or is there like rollerblades that make your characters move faster?
There is
rollerblades.
I have. Someone's made them. Yep.
But no Heelys though, so you're still in.
No Heelys.
Dang.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. Downloading it on my phone right now.
We're gonna make a killing.
We're gonna make a killing off of virtual Heelys. Call them Webleys.
I'm so excited. I just bought my first pair of triple whites.
I saw that. Why?
What do you mean, why?
Why would you get a shoe that's all white and you could see it's going to get dusty and you're going to see.
Why, Kurt? Like, tell them why.
I don't buy all white shoes.
Why would someone get all white shoes?
Why would someone get out to wear them out and get them dirty?
It's the drip.
Respect the drip, Karen. I saw somebody wear triple whites at Disneyland. I was like, what is wrong with you? You clearly don't know what these are. You just thought they were comfortable and you bought them. You're not a sneakerhead.
They're insane people.
I got some triple white Air Force Ones. living out my high school fantasies.
Actually oh I have triple white Air Force Ones. Well,
do you
I
really?
Have a triple white Air. I don't know what the other one is. I have one. I don't know what happened.
Okay, well then you get the other ninja shoe that Kurt was going to give me.
There you go. Match with you. One gift, two people.
Exactly.
Done. In junior high or whatever, I dated somebody, and it was right when the song Air Force One came out. And I was like, I really want to get these shoes. And she's like, no, you're not getting those shoes. We broke up. The day we broke up, I went to the mall and picked up some Air Force One.
You showed her web.
Yeah, I did.
And lost one of them.
And I lost one.
You're supposed to buy two purs just in case you lose one.
What else we got? Telltale is coming back.
Let's go. And not like with the same ownership, right? This is a whole new thing.
They've been bought by a company called LCG Entertainment. The new company will sell some of the Telltale's back catalog and will work on new games based on a few Telltale associated properties as well as new licenses.
Mm.
So that's going to be pretty cool.
So Telltale games are 100% the opposite of Sinespace. Like in Sinespace, yes. You could do literally anything. And in this one, they give you very basic, you know, yes or no type of scenarios to weave through. Have you played any of these yourself?
Adam? Oh, yeah. I want a new Sam and Max series to come out.
Ooh, there we go. Was that the main one you were into?
Yes. Yeah, I played a few of them, but Sam and Max was my favorite.
I think the one I'm looking most forward to is that Wolf Among Us.
Wolf Among Us and Batman are two that are named that will be coming back.
Let's go.
So they're working, in a quote, the new head of the Telltale games, Jamie Oddly and Brian Waddle.
I'll allow it.
I'm probably
sounds about right.
Yeah, sure. One of their quotes is, "We're working very hard not to make similar mistakes."
Okay, don't abuse your employees. I don't think it's that hard to not make that mistake.
I don't think it's hard. It's treat your employees like people.
That was most of their problem.
Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
web talk.
I don't know.
I'm hoping he's like just assuming that that's already going to change and that what he's talking about is like the technology of the games never improving. It feels like they felt like, oh, it's just licensing play, you know? We don't have to improve any of the mechanics or add, you know, any more branching storylines or...
The beauty of it, though, is it did make it very easy for them to port the games over to, like, mobile. Like, Wolf Among Us, I played on my phone.
Yeah, because there's story.
I played it on my iPad.
Yeah, it's super easy to just port them over because they're very simple games that don't have a lot of advancement into them, so it's easy to just bump them into an app and move them over. But on the other hand, if you play them on like the console, then it kind of provides a lacking experience.
Yeah, so Kurt, you played some of these too. You glad to see these guys back? Anything you're looking forward to coming back?
I enjoyed Telltale, yeah. Of course, I played Wolf Among Us. I played a little bit of the Batman game too. And, yeah, I'm happy to see them back. I really like their aesthetic of the games. Of course, it was entertaining to be able to, you know, kind of pick your own adventure, so to speak. And I always really enjoyed, like, reading those types of books and playing those types of games. It gives you an extra layer of feeling like you're in control. And, obviously, you like to see the different consequences of the decisions that you make and how far it spread. You know, some decisions reverberate. So, I really despise the way that they went out originally. No one likes to see... you know, a creative company with the pretty solid product go out like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, regardless of, you know, the waning attention for The Walking Dead, you know, people wanted to see that through. So to me, I'm pretty happy that they came back. It's weird. It's too soon for it to be nostalgic, but at the same time, I feel a little bit of that with this returning.
Yeah. I get that.
So you talk very highly of the East of West comic franchise.
I do.
I think it's time to start a campaign going to get Telltale East of West.
Oh, dude, that would be incredible. They would be very wise to do that, and especially while I can't say while it's cheap because Amazon's already got their paws on it, but before it gets out to the public, you know, because it's going to be a lot more expensive. Jonathan Hickman's name is, you know, in the title credits of Infinity War and Endgame, and Endgame is the highest grossing film of all time. So you better grab his creator-owned content while you can, because with all of the different characters and all of the ways that the story moves and forms and whatnot, people who do not even know the content would enjoy it vastly, and it would be nice to see those people turn into fans of the comic.
It's hard to see, like, looking back on it, how Telltale failed with how many huge partnerships they had.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, they came out the gate strong with Walking Dead, which this is, like, early 2000s Walking Dead or mid-2000s Walking Dead. It was hot back then.
Yeah.
They went into Marvel stuff with the Guardians of the Galaxy. They got to tell an original Batman story.
Yep.
Wolf Among Us was like one that people weren't talking about. What was it, Fairy Tale? Or
there is based heavily on Fairy Tale.
Yeah, the it's based off characters novel. From that world and stuff. Like,
yeah,
their partnerships were crazy. I don't see how they were failing unless their cuts were just that bad.
That would have been it. That would have. I mean, I'm speculating here. I don't know the answer, but when you do work with those big branded contents, they usually have two things: one, a very large cut, and two, they have minimum royalties. Like, you'll have to pay like $5 million or something up front just to get the ability to work with the brand. And my guess is they probably had both of those things happening, and it probably hit their crash really badly. Usually, when you see all those situations where a company's overworking all of its staff to death. It's usually because they're out of money, because they've got sort of cash flow problems going on, and that means that they can't afford to hire the people they need to hire, and then have to put all the work on the people who have left.
I saw an amazing GIF. We have at Energy some creatives that do videos and create websites, and we're constantly always asking them for the world in such a short amount of time, and finally one of them broke it down for us in a graph. And it's like, if you want it fast, it's going to cost a lot of money. If you want it good, it's going to take a lot of time. Mm-hmm. If you want it cheap, it's going to be shit.
Yeah,
so like, straight up. And it's like a law of physics. You can't break this law. It's always true all the time. That's crazy. Is there any franchises that you would want to see, David?
Ooh.
They've done so many already. They've already got Game of Thrones, versions. So is there anything
else
out there? I want to
see more Marvel stuff. Like, I'm a Spider-Man fan, so I'd like to see a Spider-Man.
I bet they could do that good, too.
Yeah.
Pick a good storyline.
Yeah.
What about you, Adam? If you were on the Telltale board.
Ooh, Telltale board. Oof. You know what I'd like to see? I'd like to see The Expanse. Have you guys been watching that?
Huh. Oh, no. I've heard of it, though. It's on Sci-Fi, right? It's
really good.
What is that?
It's my favorite show at the moment. It's better than Game of Thrones.
Hang on.
I'm gonna go all seasons.
No way.
I like it. I like it. He's being bold.
He's going big. Like, so what? Break it down for us. What's good about it?
So it's hard science fiction. That means mostly hard anyway. So it's physically plausible. I mean, I'm a bit of a geek, so I don't mind that stuff. It's purely physically plausible. It's set about 100 plus years in the future. Humanity's colonized the solar system, and it's a political drama. It's very similar to Game of Thrones.
That's awesome.
But it's really well written. I'd say that the TV series, the first couple of episodes don't make a whole lot of sense. It'll make sense by the end of the first season. Season two is brilliant. Season three was fantastic. It hasn't sort of suffered any of the... I mean, Game of Thrones was good, but some of the seasons are a bit hit and miss. Like, season six, I don't think was that hot.
Yeah.
This one, it seems to be firing on all cylinders the whole way through. It's really good, and it comes back in December, so you've got a while to catch up on it.
All right. Where can we watch this? Anybody... Is this like
it's on Amazon Prime Video.
Oh, never
mind. It's on Amazon Prime.
Okay.
Let's go.
Not Sci-Fi.
All right. What else we got in the news, David?
Last but not least, it would not be an episode of EGB if we did not talk a little bit about Overwatch.
Hell yeah.
We got some Overwatch news coming to the Switch.
So this is like based off a lot of speculation of like
lots of speculation.
There's been talk of like Nintendo talking with Blizzard for a while here.
Right.
And then now I guess there was some images leaked, which could be fake, as always, but it was a case for a Nintendo Switch.
All based on a case, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of this stuff came off of 4chan. Someone has been saying for a while that there's going to be like a Blizzard character was going to be in Smash, and there was something pointing to the word Mecha. So everybody was starting to think, of course it's going to be D.Va.
Yeah.
But it kind of like came and went, like everybody's been... said they're going to be in Smash. Like, that's just what happens in
right.
Smash.
We have characters coming up in Smash.
Yeah, I think the Dave and Webb DLC will be out eventually.
Yeah, like, that character's going to be
crazy. It's just what you do, because people love that game so much, they're always thinking about it, so they're always fantasizing.
Right.
Like, oh, this would be awesome.
Oh, it would be awesome if this person, yeah.
But
I mean, there's some... It's a little bit of ground, but there's some grounds for this being plausible.
I hope so. What do we got?
So last year, Blizzard announced that they were porting Diablo 3 to the Nintendo Switch.
Yeah.
So we know Blizzard has a partnership with Nintendo in existence.
They're talking.
Then you have an AMA, during a Reddit AMA, Jeff Kaplan said, "I'm loving the Switch. My second favorite gaming platform of all time is the 3DS. Getting Overwatch on the Switch is very challenging for us, but we're always open-minded to explore new possible platforms." So they've talked about it. I feel like if he said that, then there's been deeper conversations behind the scenes.
Where there's smoke, there's fire. Because
exactly.
Daddy Jeff's, he's a professional.
Yeah,
he doesn't
yeah.
let shit slip that's not supposed to be out there unless, you know, there's like a reason behind it.
So it's very plausible. And then in this story that we got coming to us from Apple News, we do see a tweet that has the images, and it's officially licensed by Nintendo and Blizzard. Switch case. It has Overwatch logo on it. I mean, it looks clean. It looks official.
I play Overwatch in all low settings anyways, and I've played Paladins on PC and on Switch, and it was a decent, like, it was a good experience. So
yeah.
I could totally see Overwatch being a viable game on the Switch with a pro controller, though. I there's no way you're going to be playing that with a freaking Joy-Con. Like, if you can, good freaking luck.
Motion controls. If you take the Joy-Cons off and you use them separately, you can play like D.Va.
I'm trying to think of one character that'd be fun on, and maybe Reinhardt just swinging the hammer around.
Oh.
That'd be fun.
Oh, and then you raise one up to get the shield up?
Yeah.
Oh, I would main Reinhardt.
Well, I already do, but. I think, what do you think about D.Va coming to Smash, though? Is that, there's no grounds for that yet. Now it's just kind of
speculation. If Overwatch comes to Switch, then I think that's going to be where it's like, okay, it's a matter of time. There is going to be an Overwatch character in Smash. It's just who and when.
Which one do you think makes the most sense? Curtis, I don't think you've played much Overwatch. Are you familiar with any of those characters?
Nah, I only know Reinhardt because when we did that little Christmas thing, you kept trying to get gold Reinhardts.
It wasn't happening for him.
I could see 76 being ported in as a alternate to like Fox or Falco. It had a very similar moveset as them.
Yeah.
So I could see him because that'd be an easy, basically, skin adjustment.
They do a really good job of like staying. That's the best thing about Smash, I think, why it's so successful, is they do an incredible job of making their DLC characters true to the versions that you know them from.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, even like Mr. Game & Watch, for example, every one of his animations, none of them are just like random. It's because there was games and lore that ties to those things he does.
Right.
Nothing in there is just like, oh, this is a Smash thing. It's only in Smash.
Yeah, exactly.
So if they did, Soldier 76 would have like a healing pad and a straight projectile rocket.
Yep.
I would lean more towards like maybe Junkrat. Like a weird projectile explosion.
Yeah.
A little mobility with the traps. I think Junkrat would be good in there.
I could see his traps maybe even being an item. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. So we'll be tracking this one quite carefully because it, you know, mixes a bunch of our loves. One thing too that came out today was Overwatch League announced their a lot of teams came out with their tickets. Today was the ticket go live.
Yeah.
And this is what like all the teams have been thinking about since the Overwatch League had started. Is the whole thing was like, oh, we're gonna get home games. We didn't know when they were coming. We thought they could be in second season, third season, maybe even fourth season, but they're coming in third season. We've talked about a little bit on the show how they're doing like experiential weekends instead of like just a bunch of home games. And our tickets went on sale today along with a lot of others. The drama was over the ticket prices.
Okay.
There's a lot of people kind of freaking out about some of the teams that came out with high prices, and you saw a lot of teams like fluctuating on the spot, like the Philadelphia Fusion. It could have been a mistake with their ticket vendor, but every seat in the house was like $275.
Whoa!
Like the cheapest seat in the back of the arena was 200. Like, That's what you pay to go see a Jonas Brothers concert. You know, like, that's pretty ridiculous.
And I am going to see the Jonas Brothers when they come to the Golden One Center. I just want to make that known.
That's what makes you beautiful, Kurt.
Thank you.
I get
it, because it's a song. Yeah. But the rest of the team seemed to be pretty well priced. We launched ours. Man, it's a lot more work than I think people think. And we did come out with some of the most modestly priced tickets. But it's tough. Like, I could see why teams would easily have to spend that much money, because getting a venue of this size is not cheap. And I think, like, the average consumer isn't really thinking about the cost that goes into making these. Like, all these Overwatch teams are basically little startup companies.
Right. Yeah, it's true.
It's really what they are. They invested a lot of money in hoping that this league takes off, and you got to pay your employees, you got to pay your players. That money doesn't just come from thin air. And now we're throwing these big experiential weekends, which takes a venue of, like, the Cow Palace, where the fucking Beatles played and presidents have spoke there. Like, this is
San Jose?
Daly City.
Yeah, Daly City.
That's where we're going to be at the first one. Like, that's a legendary spot. It's not Chuck E. Cheese, you know?
Right, straight up.
And so, and you got to keep people interested. So we got to come up with, you know, special guests, flying people out, all these types of things. We want to make it a super fun event. So at some point, you got to be, like, a little more understanding of where these ticket prices are coming from.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, we haven't been knocked on ours, thankfully. I think ours came out right in the target zone, but it's scary.
Yeah.
Have you been following any of these, like, leagues that have been popping up, Adam? Like Overwatch League, Call of Duty League?
Unfortunately, I barely have enough time to make games, enough time to play them or follow it too detailed, unfortunately.
I think that's what you're missing, man. You need to do Sign Space 99, where it's a battle royale, throw in some esports budget, and there you go.
Someone is working on a battle royale. I have seen it.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Can you ban him? Can you tell him not to?
Maybe.
Is his name Ninja, and are you going to pay him $1 million?
No and no. Aww.
A million gold, maybe.
Yeah, I can do that. That's actually still worth a fair chunk. That's like 10,000 bucks worth.
Is it really? Oh, snap.
Yeah.
Let's go. We're in the wrong business, boys.
Apparently.
We're moving VGB to Sign Space.
Yeah.
Recording live.
Recording live from Sign Space.
From our make-believe studio. Oh, that actually could be sick.
Actually, our studio in there would be lit.
That would be actually pretty cool.
One thing I wanted to catch up with you guys about, too, because you guys both missed the last weekend show, which shout out to Nexi. I mean, we haven't done a two-person show on this show for a while. You know, we had a little bit of a scheduling hiccup. It was my fault with the Sign Space guys. So we went into crunch time. Nexi showed up, and we just hammered a show out. And she's a brilliant, bright young mind who, like, had me scratching my head pretty much the whole episode. It was it's an experience. If you haven't if you listened to that one, go back and listen to the last episode. But, you know, we got to talk about a little bit of the Disney announcements that came out from D23. Anything that caught your guys' eye before we wrap this thing up?
I saw The Mandalorian dropped a trailer. I have not watched it, but I know it exists.
Very well. Thanks for the input, David.
You're welcome. That's what I'm here for. Cutting news.
The trailer, I didn't see it.
But it's there.
But I hear it's
so
cool.
So go check it out. I hear it's all right. There's a Mandalorian in it. It's Star Wars. Go check it out.
I'm excited for that one just because Mandalorians were my favorite in the Old Republic.
Like, yeah.
They're basically Boba Fett's, you know, like that type of armor. That's Mandalorian armor. And they're like this race of human badasses who use military tactics to compete with Jedis and stuff.
Yeah.
They're super awesome. So I could see that being a really cool series. But Kurt, what caught your eye, man?
Episode 9 trailer was whack. It was Huck.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, it's Huck.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's confirmed Palpatine, right? Remember we were breaking down like whose laugh that was, and we thought it was Luke, and on the poster, Palpatine's there.
But, like, on the poster, but that still doesn't mean that was Palpatine's laugh.
I saw it. So, again, I didn't see the trailer. I know it exists.
Thanks, David.
And but I did see there's, like, a bunch of drama going on around Rey. Rey has, like, this, like, black hood on, and she has a red lightsaber.
She's going dark side?
Oh, snap.
That's Huck, too. That's like heck of try hard. Now it's like, that's what they got to do to sell it. Now she might be the dark side. I don't care. I don't care about that. I'm still going to see the movie, but
we're all going to go see it.
Yeah, we're all going to go see it, but I don't care about her going to the dark side. Anyway, that's Huck. On positive news, Black Panther 2 officially got announced, so I was pretty stoked off that. Pretty much all the Marvel stuff, them showing first images of WandaVision, the first images and concept art for Falcon and Winter Soldier, She-Hulk, which I'm actually interested in because She-Hulk's pretty interesting, and
Moon Knight
one I'm interested in as well because I like Jeff Lemire's run on it. And anybody who has not read Moon Knight, Jeff Lemire's run, go back and run it. I bought it for Galen.
Oh, sick,
dude! He hit me and he was like, "Oh my gosh, it's so dope! I'm gonna have Ray watch it or read it." I was like, "All right." And then the last thing was probably just Miss Marvel. I'm kind of interested in it. I only read a little bit of her in the comics, but interesting character.
I kind of was worried about the Moon Knight and She-Hulk one specifically because those characters can both be pretty dark, you know, and both be pretty suggestive even.
Yeah.
And from what we were told, like, Disney Plus is still going to be, like, pretty mild when it comes to the content. It's not going to be like what we got on the Netflix where things can get like gritty and dark.
Yeah.
And I was really hoping for a Moon Knight one we'd get to like kind of push some of those boundaries of like, you know, his kind of dual personalities and craziness that kind of can go into that. So.
Yeah. I mean, even in Jeff Lemire's run, like they do really test that, but it doesn't like that comic book, you could easily say it's PG-13. Okay. They don't get like too adult with it. It's more just about the writing. If you got creative writing, you don't have to make things sexually suggestive. You don't have to make things dark. You know, you could tell a good story if you got a good story to tell.
Yeah. Adam, did you see anything from D23 or Star Wars stuff that you found was interesting?
Nothing you guys haven't discussed already, actually. I was interested in The Mandalorian. What I would love to see, like, out of all the Star Wars stuff, the stuff that I would love to see come to TV or film, HK-47 from the Old Republic.
There we go. You know we'll get it in an Old Republic franchise. Yep. Were they supposed to do that with the guys from Game of Thrones?
Guys from Game of Thrones are doing a trilogy.
Yeah, Benioff and Weiss are supposed to be doing like a trilogy for Star Wars, and what I heard it was going to be take place in the Old Republic.
Oh, that so would just be the do time. Game of Thrones, put Jedi skin on it and call it good.
Have you guys experienced HK-47?
Uh-uh.
Oh, he's probably one of the most iconic characters from that franchise, and he's just a human-hating, killing robot. He's an assassin droid.
Oh, I know of him, but I haven't like experienced him.
They've memed him. He's definitely like, if you want the fun experience in that game and you're going dark side, the more fucked up shit you do, the more he likes you.
There's also an Obi-Wan series coming out.
Did you see Obi-Wan?
Ewan McGregor.
Yeah.
I want that. That's what I want.
So that's going to be cool.
Yeah, that's that shit I do like. That was overall, we predicted this 100%. Not all the stuff that was going to happen necessarily, but remember we were saying, don't really worry about San Diego Comic-Con. Mm-hmm. Disney's going all out at D23, and that's the standard now.
Yeah, pretty much.
Don't be too excited for Marvel at San Diego Comic-Con, because now D23 has been blowing up year after year.
Yeah.
Yep. Cool, that's our show, guys. Thank you so much for hanging out. If you listen to the show live on Twitch, please go download the episodes on iTunes, Spotify, Pandora, Audio Boom, anywhere you can find podcasts. Generally, you can find Video Game Bang. We're not hard to find. You can listen, catch up to the old episodes all the way up to the new ones, see the things we got right in gaming history, see the things we got wrong, see all the cool people we've talked to in the past, too. You can do that on vgbstudios.com. Go to that guests tab, and you'll see everybody we've talked to, including our great guest today, Adam from Science Space, man. Thanks for being with us, brother. Tell us again where we can go find and learn more about the game.
Sign.space. SINE.space.
Sign.space. Super easy. There's a big download button right on the front. You just create.
There is.
I don't even think I had to create an account. I think I did, but it wasn't like
you
a requirement.
You actually can log in as a guest user.
We
added that support. But there's a big update to the website coming on Monday, I think, actually. The whole thing is getting replaced.
Oh, exciting times. So go check out the game now. David Webb, what you been working on, man? Tell us about that VAST grind.
It's working on VAST. VAST is streaming now, so go check us out over on twitch.tv/VASTGG. I got some, let's see, tomorrow, or if you're listening to this on the podcast, tonight.
Thursday.
Playing Fortnite.
Not you, of course.
No, God, no.
Yeah.
So it's 5:30 to 9:30 Central every weeknight.
Cool. And you'll be in the chats, right?
I'll be in chats, yeah.
Nice. Curtis, tell us about all the projects you got going on, man.
Krakoa Cast, us covering it's not an X-Men book yet. It's the current mutant book by Jonathan Hickman, House of X, and then there's a second book they both intertwine called Powers of 10. It's the hottest book in the comic and book industry right now. So hot that Corey and I decided we needed a... Well, Corey decided we need a podcast.
Like, Kurt, you don't have a choice, man. We're doing a podcast about X-Men.
Pretty much. I had no choice in the matter. So that's been really fun and exciting. And then also the Sactown Breakdown, which is the Sacramento Kings, Stockton Kings, and the 2K team, the Kingsguard podcast. We just had Yusuf Scarbs, our power forward, on last night, interviewed him. That was really good. And like I said, played against him, and he whooped all of our butts in 1v1. But I had the game-winning dunk in 2v2, and I just actually shared that clip. So go find it at the actually, it's just Sactown Breakdown with no O's on Twitter. And outside of that, just been streaming on my stream again. I streamed on a VGB stream the other night. I don't know if anybody noticed.
I got the little token thing.
Yeah, I just did a little quick stream which alliance is it?
This is
Ultimate Alliance, Black Order.
Yeah.
So I just did some of that, and then streaming on mine in the Sactown Breakdown Twitch, man. That's it. I've been really busy, man. It's been busy when I'm not, you know, sick and in bed. I've been running around.
Yeah, man. If you want to see what I've been working on, guys, the only thing that's been on my mind the last week has been shock2020.com. If you guys hear me talk about my job and the things I do every once in a while on the show, but really want to get an idea for what it is, you can check out that website, get all the details. Tickets are in pre-sale only right now, but go open to the public on Friday. And I'm telling you, our events in March at the Cow Palace and in July at the San Jose Civic are going to be crazy good. We're going to be pulling every card out of the hat, all of our guests, all of our investors. We're going to be going through and really making a killer experience. So thank you again to everybody who came out and shook my hand and met some of the players at Caltopia. And then even before that, man, we had this crazy watch party in Daly City, the same city that Cow Palace is at. We had 150 people crammed into a Buffalo Wild Wings.
Damn.
Bud Light gave us a shitload of free t-shirts and sweaters to give away. And gift like a stack of gift cards, and it was just one of the most fun things. We celebrated the Shock having another undefeated stage before they head into the playoffs. So, man, I'm just in full Overwatch League mode. So if I'm not coming up for air too much, that's the reason. But luckily, I will always make time for the video game. Bang for Adam of Science Space, Curtis Fisher,
Thank
the
you.
Real David Webb. My name is Corey. Saying you've just been banged.